2 on April 5th with Goodwin Stemmikin, and we were talking about community center.
Okay, then we...
We might have lost the back end of that, so maybe we can say again about how much work those 50 or 60 foot logs are. And so you suggested a 6-corner or 8-corner building with 24 foot logs.
Yeah. So we went and got, well, the $2,800 wasn't enough, so I told him we could go buy some gas and maybe give a few dollars to the young guys and go cut some logs. We could make a 6 or 8 corner building, and but it's going to be much bigger than 60 or 40 foot logs anyway, I told him, you know. So I guess they didn't believe me for a while. But they didn't know how they were going to do it or who was going to do it. So they went and got the logs. It took them 1 week for 17 guys to cut the 160 logs. Oh, gee, I got mad, you know, because when I lost my house in fire, I went back in the woods and we cut 80 logs one night, and they were all 40-foot logs. You know, they're much harder to handle than 24-foot logs. And there were 17 of them. There was only 10 of us go back there and cut 80 logs one night. Two nights I had 160 logs. You know, it's all the logs I need for my house. And there is 17 of them. Took 1 week. I went up here at 18 Mile. I even brought them to place. I even paid for my own gas and bring them up there and show them a place where to get logs. The guys were making homebrew, they were all young generations there, you know, they were making homebrew and having parties and everything. I found out about 3 or 4 days later. I didn't get all the logs, you know. Gee, I got that. And then I came back down, and then they finally brought the logs down. 40 or 50 logs left up there. Nobody to bring it down. That summer I went, then the youth corps started. I went up there with the youth corps, and then I spent about 12 hours getting those logs out. I mean, getting down here and all, you know. And then I knew it was going to be hard pulling it up the bank with these little kids. So I put out the trenches down, and then we started pull those logs up. A woman started helping us. Then some ladies went by and then started pulling logs up with us. And after we pull all the logs, and then we asked the construction guys that were building the school here if I could haul gravel for me. They said they would. They would haul gravel for me. What I want to do, I want to put that whole community hall on a path, you know. A whole pad of gravel, but we couldn't get that much gravel. So instead of that, I pick up all the drums that was around town, empty drums. I fill them with gravel and sink them down into the ground, down to the permafrost. And then we lay our foundation down. So the youth corps, I tell them what to do, and they do it, you know. The kids, they were doing it. They were doing it all right. But soon we're out of money. It was like that for 2 years, fighting for some money, trying to build that place. We had all the logs already. Finally, they got.
How much money had you spent to that point? So it was 28,000 or
28,800 was all we spent for that place. Yeah.
That's hardly any.
And then they told me to figure out how much material we would need. Well, we figured up $12,000 worth of material, plus about $30,000 worth of labor work. So they kind of add that up and then give it that much more money. And so they hired one of us off city council. Then, they tell me how you're going to put in that top on top, you know. I said, we'll figure out some way how we're going to do it. And even though I didn't figure up anything, I just designed the floor pattern, that's all, you know, how it was going to come up. I said, you know, some carpenters will take care of it, and Plaska took over from there. Plaska Nikolai, he was a carpenter. And, well, I kind of gave him a hint what was going to, how I was going to do it, you know, and then how we were going to put the beams up, you know, up to a peak like that. I think we're going to get some 24-foot 2x6 in order to make that, you know. So we kind of figured everything all up. And then when you start building it, that's all he was doing, just making a blueprint of his own, you know. And then came up. And well, I never went around. I was working here, and then I go up there once in a while. And it seems like everything was doing all right, you know. 19 days that place came up. It was all complete in 19 days. You know.
How many people worked on that?
There was about 20 guys working there. But they were all working like mad people, you know. They were really going. And in 19 days that place, and then we figured up it was 6,000 square feet inside, you know. With that much space inside the building. And I tried to get them to get furnace, hot air furnace. And that place, it won't take much, I said, if you've got hot air furnace in here. It won't take very much heat or fuel to warm this place. Now, they still don't believe that yet, I guess, up to now, you know. I said, we're not going to use that furnace right now. I said, the heat will just come whenever it's needed. Other than that, I said, you're not going to waste any heat. You know, it will just come on and off and on all the time. You know, and the heat will just come on whenever we need it, that's all. I think they kind of believe it this winter, and they said, well, what kind of furnace we should order for that place? Well, I said, these furnaces in the school are not too big. And one of those little ones like that will keep this place warm. But what you need is a heat duct. Well, they didn't know how to put that into it. And they thought you need one of these at 1 foot square or 18 inches wide. And I know they cost money. I said, we don't need to put in something like that to heat up the place. As you could get one of those 6-inch stovepipe, put it right underneath the benches and make draft everyone other place. And you'd be surprised how that place would warm up in no time, you know, with that little furnace. And of course, the heat only won't come out of one spot. It'll come out from all over the floor, and then it'll just heat up the seats and everything. And then the pipes will be out of the way. Heat duct will be out of the way. Now, because I'm not on the council, you don't believe me, you see. All my nephew is on is the city mayor. Fred Elkson is the city mayor. My son is a vice president.
Which son is that?
Goodwin Jr.
Well, people must be really proud of that, community center, huh?
They sure was proud of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do they get wood now to heat it?
They gotta go. They gotta go hire somebody to get some wood.
The city buys it,
yeah.
How much wood do they burn every year?
During Christmas holiday, they were burning quite a bit of wood. They were burning about a cord of wood a week, I guess.
Did they use that the whole week?
Used the whole week, right, yeah. Yeah. Because there was something going on all the time during the Christmas holidays, you know.
Well, what other kinds of things did you work on with the city council? You talked a little bit about that earlier. Mm-hmm. When you worked on the city council, what else did you see So you worked on getting the sewers in, and you worked on the community center. What other kinds of things for Caltech?
Well, I was thinking about some other things that would have improved the village, like, you know, for like gardening, you know, something like that would help people. Was it John Kirk, I guess, from Galena was the one that was taking care of that agriculture. You know, a garden equipment, like.
So that's so everybody can have their gardens rototilled.
Rototilled, right, And some seeds and fertilizer.
So do a lot of people garden?
Well, a lot of them have put up quite a few gardens last year. Because we had that rototiller, you know. And then some of them took it to their camps. I took it down to my camp too, and I tried it down there. But
so you it didn't work. Your fish camp too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't work very good. But, quite a few of them took it to their camps and tried to make some gardens in their camps, like George Madras had fished that garden down his camp.
Maybe we should finish up these photographs here, so we can
eat.
Oh, you want
to
stop and go eat?
Yeah, please.
Why don't we stop here and then we can start again after a while.
Okay.
Okay? Okay, we're back taping with Goodwin Semekin and Caltech, April 5th. And we're doing photo IDs. We already did 1 through 4, and now we're on number 5.
This was my brother-in-law. His name is Francis Madras.
And he was in the service or something?
He was in the service. And he died while he was in the service, he died. He had pneumonia when he was coming home. After 4 years, he was coming home from the army, and he caught pneumonia. They got up here in Fairbanks, and they brought the body in. That was in 1946.
So this is a few years before this? This is what, maybe 43, 44, around there?
He was in the army since 1942.
So this is somewhere between 1942 and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this picture is probably taken in Caltech?
It was taken in. In fact, I was taken in the army. Yeah, this was taken in Caltech.
He was home visiting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was taken, right?
Okay, number 6.
Okay, let's see, on the left is this person.
That's Eli Stanley.
And then this is...
That's his brother, Missouri Stanley. That one was Simon Stanley. He was in the service at that time. He was on furlough.
So they're all brothers?
They're all brothers, yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard some of those names. Now, they used to live around here, or are they, any of them still here in Caltech?
Oh, just this one right now. Missouri is in Carriage North right now. Mm-hmm. It's Eli, though. He died quite a few years back. But Simon is still in town.
So were they all older than you?
Simon was just about 4 years older than me. The rest are old, much older than me.
This picture looks like it was taken quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm. That was, I don't know when the picture was taken. It was taken quite a while ago.
Maybe in the 40s
or something? That's when he was in the service, yeah. Yeah. That must be taken about 43 maybe.
Yeah. What kind of, say for young people in Caltech who never knew them, what kind of things would be good for them to know about? Like Missouri Stanley and his brother, what they did, or how they lived?
Yes, that's a hard question to ask. Well, I know these guys worked real hard as I was growing up. You know, I grew up with him in here. And they worked pretty hard for their living. And like I said, they were living off the country. Most of the time, there was no kinds of job in Caltech at that time or anywhere else. Only the job that was available was railroad. Yeah. But I don't think this Simon was only the one that was working on the railroad.
When they worked on the railroad, was that for the barges? Or
for the barges, yeah. Yeah.
That's when the railroad owned the barges?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they never actually worked on trains or anything, it was just on the barges?
Simon did work on the railroad.
So he went to Yanana?
He went to Yanana and then worked from between Anchorage and Seward, Fairbanks and Seward.
So all of them would have to leave Caltech in the summer to work?
In order to work, yeah.
Is that about the same time you went? Or?
No, it was way before my time.
So when you were talking earlier about people who worked really hard for their families in the woods, they all had to do that same thing.
They had to all do the same thing off the country. Mm-hmm.
What kind of name is Missouri Stanley? You got a name like Missouri Stanley.
Well, his regular name was Cyprian. Cyprian was his real name.
Like S-I-P-A-R-Y?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The last name for some people?
Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they used to give a nickname to each other, you know. That's how he got that Missouri, name of Missouri.
Mm. How did he get that nickname?
I don't know. When they went to school, I guess they were some kind of geography, like the state outside, you know, like Nevada and Missouri and what was Mississippi. All those things, you know. There's some guys that are gone now that had some nicknames like that, you know.
It was just like a word they liked when you were going to school or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did they all go to school in Caltech, or any of them go to?
I don't think they went to any school. These two, like Missouri and Eli, they never went to any school. There was no school at that time when they were. When they were young.
Okay. It's number 7. Gee, we've got a whole bunch of people, and you say it's all your family.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what we'll do, you said this is your father's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it was a shock to me when my father died. He was pretty old, and he was hardworking man that ever since I was growing up. He worked pretty hard. Sometimes he used to get only three, four hours sleep at night. And then he would be going the next morning again.
And you said he lived to be?
Well, according to his record from Nolado, you know, it was the priest, Father Bo, told me that he was 105 years old. And it seems like he wasn't that old when he died, you know. But he had a gadarene in his leg, you know. So they had to cut off his leg. That's only the way they could have stopped it. And then he was on crutches for about a year or two. I think that's what got him real fast. Besides that, he had a heart attack when he went to the hospital. He got sick, and then we sent him to a town in the hospital, what was the closest hospital there was at that time. And then a day after that, they heard that he died. Well, the doctor said he died of a heart attack. Mm-hmm.
So what year was this that he died?
It must be in 55, I think.
And you were real close to your father, no? You used to spend a lot of time with him.
I spent all my life with my father. In fact, I was one of the youngest one amongst my six brothers here. Mm-hmm. I was practically the youngest one.
People in the picture from the left, the woman on the left is who?
That was my sister-in-law.
And her name was?
Lucy.
That's Lucy Semeke?
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's my mother.
Okay, so that's... And her name was?
Lizzie.
Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Man right behind
the two women? Yes, Burke. Burke Semekin is my...
Burke, B-U-R-K.
B-U-R-K, yeah.
That's your brother?
Mm-hmm.
And then next to him?
That was my oldest brother. He just died in November, I think. November, yeah. He just died in November.
And what was his name?
Wilfred Semekin.
And then
that's Benjamin.
That's also your brother?
Mm-hmm.
And
Gilbert is working as a custodian here in the school with me.
Oh, he works here too.
Mm-hmm.
And then next to him?
Next one is Otti.
O-T-T-I-E.
He's at Care Short right now too.
And that also
is your brother. It's my youngest sister.
What's her name?
Regina.
What's your last name?
Turner is her last name.
And then somebody is cut off.
Yeah, I couldn't make out who was that. My picture is not in there.
You were taking a picture?
Maybe I was taking the picture.
Father, he has new gloves on and all that, is all
dressed up. Mhm. Well, that's the way we usually dress up one another, is put on the new clothes. And not a coffin, I know it was made by this coffin. You know, I designed one for my wife.
The coffin?
Yeah. And last year when Edgar Callan died, you know, the design, I mean, they made the same kind, but only thing you made a little bit different than when I, you know, my wife never used to want anything that was, you know, ordered from outside. And then quite a few guys asked me to order a coffin for outside coffin making.
Mm-hmm.
Even from Fairbanks, I told them, no, I said, I'll make one.
Mm-hmm.
So I just did design one. And what was really, really nice, you know, I designed it pretty good. I didn't make it, I just tell the boys how to make it. Plasko was the one that made it for me, Plasko and the Klein.
Mm-hmm.
He's a carpenter. Mm-hmm. And he usually go along with me, like I said, you know, he's one of the best friends. He would go along with me, everything I tell him to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come back and ask me a question, how we're going to do this and that. And then him and I always agreed to each other pretty much, you know.
It's a different kind of shape and everything.
It's a different kind of shape, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you thought it was a pretty good design that I made one like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't make it like I say, you know, but I designed it and then I told them what to do.
Mm-hmm. So that's your same time he made the one for Edgar Cannon?
For Edgar Cannon last year, yeah. And he followed that design. Yeah. And then I didn't put no that kind, I just varnished it. And that's what they did with the Edgar Cannon's casket.
Mm-hmm.
They just varnish it.
So it was a lumber or plywood?
This was plywood, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this number 8.
Mm-hmm. That's my uncle. My uncle, he said he used to be a good runner. He used to tell us a lot of stories, you know, about his young days. I wish I had listened to them more about their stories. And he used to tell us a lot of stories, how he used to make a living, you know, and he used to be a pretty hard-working man, and he had a good home.
And what was his name?
Slim Reuben. In fact, his house is still standing over here, the other side of my house. That's the first building that was put up in Caltech, I understand, and then it's still standing right now. His daughter, he was like me, you know, he was pretty well off. And then he's hired some guys to whipsaw the logs to make a tree side cut out of the logs. And that's what that building was made out of, a tree side cut logs. But the only thing, those logs, they're big, you know. They're about 18-inch diameter, I guess, some of the logs are. And he really put some work on it. Well, I never seen they were building it. I never seen it, you know. But he must have designed the tool like that.
How his last name is R-U-B-E-N or I-N?
R-U-B-I-N.
Well, and that's the name he always went by was Slim Reuben?
Slim Reuben, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's his wife right there.
What's her name?
I do not know her name. You see, died when I was very, very small. You know, I know she died in May, in month of May. Because I remember the time we went to our spring camp, and then my mother and my dad had to come up from the camp down here, 22 miles below here. And then I came with them, and the ice was about ready to go then. You know, the month of May, it must be about the 15th or 7th, between 15th and 17th of May. And after we had the funeral, then we left, went down to 22 miles. We couldn't get to the shore because there was ice that's all on right in the middle of the river. Both sides of the river was just already ice running. And then just about 5 miles above our camp, there was some ice kind of a floating together, you know. So we just walked across that, and then our dogs, we string our dogs across it and went to the shore. That afternoon, about noon, the ice went out. And
yeah, it was kind of exciting.
It was kind of, well, but I was so small, you know, I didn't get excited, but my parents was. And I know my mother used to scold me because why I went with them, you know. Because, you know, in times like that, when you're in trouble, you know, you always think about your youngest one, you know, like your family. Like, for instance, my grandchildren right now, you know, I was going to bring them up to Fairbanks for that carnival because all my daughters were there. And they just left those two little boys, all of them are, you know. And they told me to bring them up, Daddy. I asked the parents, and they said it was all right. But you couldn't even see across the river. It was so stormy. So I didn't want to take my grandchildren with me in weather like that. So I told them I have to leave them. You know, they keep calling me on the phone. They said, take those two little boys up. But I left them here because in kind of the bad weather, I told them, you know. Now, my youngest daughter is down at St. Mary's right now. I told him I was going to go down with father maybe this month sometime. He told me to take one of my grandchild down with him, with me, you know, just for a trip.
I don't know whether I will or not.
Gotta be good weather.
Gotta be good weather, you're right. Hold on.
I wonder if this is in Caltech.
That's in Caltech. That's in front of this, that's right in front of this house there, home, where I'm talking about, where they used to live, yeah. Yeah, she died way before I got married. Well, I was just a little boy, like I say, you know. She died of TB too.
So whose brother is this? Your father?
My mother. Originally, he came from out here at about 20 miles inside the Unalakleet. That's where my mother and my uncle was raised and grew up.
So you know. her maiden name was Reuben then?
My mother maiden name, yeah. She had different maiden name. I couldn't pronounce it though. It's a native, an Eskimo name. Therefore my mother was half Eskimo. You know, she used to understand the Unalakleet Eskimo language. So was my uncle. My uncle used to understand them.
So he's half Eskimo
then? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That puts me up for a quarter of an Eskimo. And so I call Unalakleet people my relation. And those people really like me too, you know, because they know me really well now. Because I go out there and visit them once. When they're two or three times a year, I go out there and visit them.
Well, do you know
his
mother or father's name?
No, I do not know her mother or father's name.
No.
No.
So there's just the two of them that you knew that were related?
Well, there's some other guys like this one here. This one here is related to them too.
Oh,
he's
originally number 9.
Yeah. He's originally from out there too. You know, Luke, little Luke, we used to call him.
Amilka
was his native name. I know his native name real well. And he was one of the old men that had pipe in his pocket from morning till night. You see, you could see he got pipe in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
As long as he was up, he had that pipe in his mouth, regardless if he was smoking or not. He just had the pipe in his mouth. All it was just a habit, I guess. And you could almost say anything to him and tease him, and he just hanging on to his pipe.
about what year do you think this might have been?
That must have been in 39, maybe somewhere in the 30s.
So he lived in Caltech too.
He lived here all his life, but his home was down here at the old village. And remember, it was only the one that was down at this old village. Him and his wife was there for quite a long time.
So he didn't move
to there? He didn't move up here till after he lost his wife. Then he moved up here and stayed with his relatives up here. And then he died up here too.
Do you remember any of the things that he talked about?
He wasn't very much of a talker. He wasn't very much of a... In fact, there's one man that I know that he never talked about his young days. But his father, the story that I heard about him, his father was a brave man, he said. He used to go across this port, this Unalakleet, about two or three times during the summer. You know, just go out packing, never carry a gun. And he never followed a trail. He just followed the ridge all the way out to Unalakleet. He had his own trail, you say. And sometimes he stayed there for about 2 or 3 weeks and then walk back again. And there he come out again, pack, and he said...
He never carried a gun?
He He never carried a gun, I heard about him. He never carried a gun, only axe. No kinds of weapon he had.
He didn't worry about bears?
He didn't worry about nothing at all, you know, nothing, no kinds of animal at all. In fact, some guys, you know, like the Tarzan, I guess, you know, he's not scared of any animal and all friendly to all the animals. Maybe his father was the same way too, you know, maybe he just talked to the animal. But, you know, this old days, they never talked too much, like for him, you know. Maybe his father was like that. He never talked very much, but he had that pipe in his mouth all the time, just holding that pipe in his mouth right along.
Do you remember his father's name?
No, I do not remember his father's name. I just barely remember him, you know.
Oh, we were talking about this one, Slim Ruben, earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about him. Do you remember any things that he said? I know you said you wish you listened harder, but are there any things you remember?
Well, no, he used to... My uncle used to tell me that he was a pretty fast runner, you know. Those days there used to be a lot of caribou around here. At one time he said in the fall time he was chasing caribou, a bull, and he had only a single shot .22 rifle, and you couldn't kill a bull. Caribou with that gun. I mean, you almost just about, the bullet would just go through the skin about. And you're shooting that, this bull caribou with that .22, and pretty soon the bull got mad at him. You know, so it started chasing him. And he run and run, he said, but he was running, he ran faster than the bull, he said, you know. He was a good runner, he said. No snowshoes. He was on just little snow on the ground in the fall time. And then he turned around and then he grabbed this caribou on the horns, you know, and started to fight with him back. You know. He was a herder too. He was a reindeer herder. So he got a little experience about some bulls that when they start to mate in the fall time, they get pretty rough, you see. And so they just grab the horns and then they twist the horns and then throw them down. Well, that's what he did, he said, you know. But this caribou is bigger than reindeer. And started to push him around, he said, he got, I guess, a little willows, I mean trees. And he finally held the bull there, he said, just twist him over and you flip over. And when he flipped over, he let go of this one side, you know, and then grab for his knife. And while you were starting, just cut his throat right off. he used to tell about that. And then he killed quite a few black bear too. You know, those days a black bear was the greatest thing for them to kiss in the fall time just before they get into their dens. And that was like a guy's kissing black bear up Nolada and Kayuku. You hear it way down here, and the news used to go real slow. He said, that guy killed this many black bear this fall. You know, that was the greatest thing for them. In fact, that was only the great biggest animal there was before there was some moose. You know.
The moose had come around.
They never had migrated at that time. You know, there was very, very few moose around here. In fact, when I was a young boy, I know if there was a moose track over there about 20 miles out, the guy seen the track, then come back with the dog team, and then tell the village people. And then all the village people would go out there and try to catch that moose.
They all go together.
They all go together.
And they share.
They share. Well, we still do the same thing around here. Like if I go out hunting or any one of us go out hunting together, then we share. We share the killing, like the meat. We share the meat together, you know. A black bear or anything mostly. I like ducks or beaver or whatever a man eats, you know. We always share it together.
All the people who go out together share.
Right, uh-huh. like in the springtime, land orders. Beaver. It used to be open season in June. Almost the whole month of June, it was open season. And we were allowed to shoot them, you know. And always a couple goes out together, or three. And if I shoot a beaver, pretty good size, I just give it to one of my friends, you know. We share it, you know. And if he catches one, then he share it with me. Or this other guy would, if he catch something, then he share it with us too, you know. It always has been that way, you know. And then, like the meat is the same way, like the caribou meat or moose meat or bear meat would be the same way. We just share with one another as long as we are out hunting together, you know.
So, I had a question and it just disappeared. Okay, well, number 10. This one you mentioned a little earlier, but well.
Okay, I went to school with this guy. In fact, he wasn't. He was about the same age as him. He must be about 6 years. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, he used to play violin for us, you know, play music for us. And he used to dance all night, especially on weekends. Then he was one of the guys that wanted, if he was as young as us, he probably would have been a flyer now, you know. Because the way he was acting, like he was making sleighs and airplane, model airplane out of wood. I would just sit around and watch him. And sometimes he'd put us, all of us, on a rope, you know, and then give him a ride in skis. You know, then he'd go back in the woods and then he'd say, "You're my dogs," you know. And then he'd give us a piece of candy apiece, you know. He'd say, "Time to eat." So he'd say, "Tie us up," you know. Like we would do with our dog team. And then say it's the overnight, and then we next say we come back again, you know. It was just a game, like, you know. And then we'd give him a ride, and then once in a while we'd slide down the hill, you know. We'd pick at the highest peak there is, and then slide down the hill in skis. And that was only the entertainment we mostly had, was sliding down and a soccer ball. Soccer ball. Well, we did not know, not like the one they got now, there's rubber. We used to make one out of those gunny sacks. We used to fill it up with some old clothes and then sew them, wrap around till it get big enough to be as big as a soccer ball. And we sew it together and then we play soccer ball with that. And every night we would do it open. In the month of after January, the nights are short then. I mean, the days are short yet, you know. Rush home at 3 o'clock, if school is out at 3, then rush home, work at work, get water, and then we'd play till the curfew. Every night there was a curfew bell. You see that school bell that was on that school? Every night the teacher would ring that at 9 o'clock. And as soon as that bell rang, We are going home, and we stay home. We never walk around.
So the teacher is the one who made the curfew?
The teacher was the one that made the curfew.
What happened if somebody didn't listen to it?
Well, the parents would been fined for that, you know, like 50 cents or 25 cents. So in those days, our parents didn't know very much about English and didn't see very many white people in around here. You know, in fact, we used to be scared of white people, us, when we were kids. I mean, if there was some white guy come down, some miner come down in a boat, you know, and stop by, we'd be scared of him. We wouldn't even talk with him. Maybe we'd be about 30 or 40 feet away from him, watching him, you know. But now this kids, this young generation, is some stranger come in town, see a little boy go up there or a little girl go up there and start in talking with the with this stranger that come in, where you come from and what you're doing and so forth. You know, they ask all that questions. Those days we never used to do that question. Because there wasn't very much. In fact, there was only one white man that was here. That was this guy that's better on the bank, Adolf Miller, plus the teacher that would come in the fall time, you know.
So the teacher actually would find parents if kids were out after curfew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People didn't get mad at
them
when they did that?
No, they thought it was good for us, you know, to understand, or it was just our beginning of the school, like, you know. So
they really wanted the kids to learn in school?
They really are. Well, my parents didn't want me to learn. They didn't want me to go to school. And he said I was just wasting my time. Wasting time.
They wanted you to learn.
They want me to be learned out in the woods. Well, I was kind of one of the youngest one in a family, and then my dad was trying to spoil me, I guess, you know, try to make a pet out of me. But my brothers went.